Hello?
Hi, Maria. It's Lisa again. Can we talk now?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. I'm transferring you over to the head of the writing team. His name is Sheldon, and he has access to all the files. He will ask you a couple of questions, all right? So consider this your first interview session. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Please stay on the line.
Go for Sheldon.
Hello.
Hi, is this Maria speaking, I assume?
Yes, Maria.
Maria. Full name being Maria, that is. I'm so lost on the last name. Oliveras?
Oliver.
Olivers, okay. And, okay, I have a few questions related to your book. The book title is Tired as Fuck, am I correct?
Correct.
Perfect. Okay. First, I would like to ask you what about the book in general. What were your aspirations and how you came to, starting writing this project?
I thought they would. I don't know. I've been asked the same question several times. So the
You don't
reason.
have to answer this if you don't want to. I have a set of
No,
questions
it's
aligned
fine.
for the outline. It's just for my own personal understanding.
I see. Okay, so the reason for the book was to, for my own acknowledgement, things have happened to me, and there was a lot of anger out there, and it takes an army to heal from being part of a domestic violence relationship for 30 plus years, and I thought my divorce was going to kill me. I was so crazy about it. And this is just to help other men and women alike that think that they have to stay in a relationship
I
because they're
see.
scared, or because it's more for men and a woman, because it happens to men as well.
Yeah, it does.
Maybe 85% is to female, but men go through it as well.
Yeah.
And I just
I'm
want to raise awareness that there is out, and there are ways to get out. There is forgiveness and things like that.
Yeah, I see, I see, I see, I see, I see. I understand. Okay, so I have a few questions written down on my end. I'm going to show them out to you, and you can see how you want to answer them, okay?
Yes, of course.
Okay, perfect. So, the first chapter delivers a promising start. The concept and meaning of independence is made clear, and we get an idea of how you perceive independence. You shared with us you always call yourself an independent person. Could you tell what made you say so? Were you financially independent? What were you doing for a living at that time? And where did you work? And what exactly is your profession?
My current profession is I'm an insurance agent. I'm also a nonprofit owner, and which is directly for the homeless and the domestic violence. The word independent came to me through therapy, and the therapy was more like, well, this is true. You're kind of independent as a person, but you got to rely on trees to breathe. You have to rely on water to survive. You have to rely on food, animals to survive. And if you're a vegetarian, you need Mother Earth to survive, to eat your plants, because you have to put something in your stomach. So that's how it became the word, the independence. I just started writing what I believed were chapters, of course, because I Googled a lot. And I just started saying, well, this is going to be independence. I don't know exactly what I'm going with it, but I just wanted to know that I've always been an independent person and my own finances, my own being. I've always remember being in middle school and no one would get up for me. I would have to get up myself and get dressed, make my breakfast, make sure I got to school on time, and vice versa, make sure I got home on time. And I helped raise my brother and my sisters at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I'm not sure if I'm answering. Am I answering your question?
Yes, you are answering my question. But,
okay.
Because I'm trying to understand the reason, like, you're also giving me the reason why you feel independent and how that independence came into being. Now, relative to so you said you are a insurance agent, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And you've been doing that for how long?
10 years.
10 years. So did this specific job or this specific profession start during your marriage, or was it there before?
During my marriage, my independence more came when I said, I know you are bigger than I am, and I know you could kill me, but I ask you to do one or two things. One, either hit me so hard that I can't remember your name and not remember what happened, or two, just kill me. And that's when I gained my independence, my voice. That's where I started getting my self back, when I finally stood up and said, I know you're bigger, I know you're stronger, but you better make sure that I don't remember you if you hit me again. I was scared crapless, but at the end of the day, I started finding my voice, and I started becoming more independent. I'm being a married woman. I was working a job, going to school, and taking care of my family.
I see. Okay. And okay, I'll pick up more detail on that when that's required. But I do feel like we'll be indulging more on this topic sooner or later. Okay.
Okay.
Second question being, tell us more about your dating life. How did you meet your future husband? How did you find him initially? At what point did you realize the whole dating thing is ridiculous?
That was easy. This is how I found out is once I divorced my husband
mm-hmm.
of 30 years, mm-hmm. Almost 30 years, I was doing stupid things such as drinking a lot. I was locked up in a room, in my best friend's room, for weeks at a time. I just get two cases of wine. I get crackers and a case of water. And that was my breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Every seldom, my friend Jane would call me and say, Marie, I need help with this. That wasn't because she needed help. I was respecting her home because she asked me to help her with something. So I'd go down, and that's when she got me and have some dinner and get two or three bites and go back to my room and sorrow and just hate the world and hate life. And then I started dating on the app, like
Tinder.
One of them was Match.com. One of them, it was just on dating apps. I don't remember all of them, but I knew my bio was up on there. And I dated, and then I didn't feel right doing this because they all wanted one thing, and that was sex. So I decided to change my bio to say something completely different. And then as I started dating more and more people, there's this guy that I dated. His ex-wife, on my last night there, spending time with his friends and knowing his buddies and having to spend the night there with him, his ex-wife comes over, and she flips out that we almost got in a car accident, because I'm like, yo, you need to get out, because she almost hit my car, and she's going to just ramp it, and there's no cops. Where are the cops when you need them? And she was just gone crazy in front of her son, in front of their son, which was so sad. And I was like, oh, my God, this dating thing. And he was a good guy. He was very respectful. He was a good guy. But then we just left it as friends and moved on. And then I started, when I dated somebody online, I have rules to find my own voice and what to expect when I'm dating. And I started saying no. I know how to pay my own lunch. I know how to pay my own dinner. I know how to pay my own movie. I can do this. And if they don't like it, there's the door. And it came to the front. There's this one person who, I mean, he cursed me out like there was no tomorrow. He read me every name of the book. And I was going to email him back all kinds of nasty stuff too. But then before I hit that send button, I deleted everything, rethought things, and no matter how upset I was, I just couldn't give him the power over me saying, oh, I got her good. No, I keep thinking about, I need my power. I need to take my voice. I need to take control of the situation. I don't need it to be blown out of proportion, because that's what this guy's doing, because he didn't have no sex. So I just typed back a very kind letter saying thank you for showing me your true colors. Thank you for showing me that if we were to move forward, that you would get very upset because you wouldn't get your way, like a little child tantrum. So something along the line. Then I know I remember finishing it by saying, God bless you. I wish you nothing but the best in life. Mm-hmm. And good luck. And please lose my phone number and my email. And I never heard from him ever again.
I see.
But then again, my phone number, I changed my phone number. But my email has not changed, and I've never heard from that person ever again.
And you have been single since?
Well, I dated a couple more times, and then I dated one guy who I actually got engaged to. It took 7 tries. I should have seen the red flags. I should have heard my friends tell me, Maria, he's a very jealous person. He's a very insecure person. And a part of me is like, but he's a good guy. He takes good care of me. He makes my lunches. He makes sure I'm good. And if I call him at 2:00 in the morning, he'll come pick me up. So the goodness was there. And I had a really dear friend of mine who said that I was, that I could have a good guy in front of me and I would miss the opportunity because I was damaged good. And that stuck by me. Comes to my understanding that those words were not encouraging words. Those were words that stuck by me, and I didn't want this guy that I finally met, miss the opportunity because of a little bit of jealousy. Well, that didn't work out very well. We bought our first house together. I was already on the lookout for a house because my family grew. And all of a sudden, I find myself looking at houses with him. And then I remember exactly the day and the moment he says, Maria, this could be where we live. We can put the kitchen over here. And I'm like, excuse me, when did this become us? This is my house. But when we got engaged, I figured, oh, my God, we're going to need a bigger house because he has a daughter of his own. So I was approved for a $250,000 house, and the house that we got was a $405,000, which that I was not approved, but with him I was approved. So I got engaged, but that the jealousy, the insecurities was overwhelming. And my last name was a problem. Not getting married by the end of the year was a problem. What is he supposed to tell his friends was a problem. And it was the guy was a decent man. It was just that he was very insecure, very needy, very jealous, and was always, I was always in the wrong. I was always wrong. So, yeah, the camouflage was there, and it took me for a limb. But then I let go of those words that was told to me, you're damaged good. Once I let go of that verbiage, I was able to see better. But still, with the guy that I'm with today,
mm-hmm.
With him, it's like all my rules, all my regulations were thrown out the door. It's almost like I immediately knew that he was the one.
Yes.
And I think it was on the third date. I've never done this. Like I said, I have plenty of rules. But on my third date with him, I smacked him a kiss, and I said, well, what do you think of that now? And he goes, well, then, dang it, I think this just turned into a date. And the rest is what we call history. We travel quite a bit with the world.
How did you meet the guy? How did you meet the guy?
I met him at my job. I met him at my job. I was a friend of mine. She says, oh, my God, they hired 17 people and one female. So that, you happen to be that one female. I was like, I guess I am. I was eating lunch in the lunchroom. And I was telling her, so how's that guy? She was asking me about my fiancé. I was like, oh, him? Oh, God, no. He's long gone, honey. That's done. I'm done with love. I'm done with what the meaning of love is for a man or a woman. I'm just done with this whole charade. I decided to work 4 to 5 jobs, and that was my 4th job that I had to make work with my full-time job. I was just over and done with it. And then here he comes. He walks around. He comes in. Drew walks in and says hello and to my friend. And he was coming to work. And I didn't know at the time he was going through a pretty tough situation himself.
Mm-hmm.
And but I thought he was as rude as shit. And I was like, screw you then. He goes, yo, hey, what's up? I'm like, hey, how you doing? It's almost like instantly I fell for him. And I was like, that's rude fuck. And that's how I distinguished myself from like, no, this can't be. This is bullshit. First love, first sight. No, that's all bull crap. He was rude as hell. So I talked myself out of it. And then when I'm done with training, the first boss that was sitting at the table when I walked in at 3 o'clock in the morning was Drew. I'm like, oh, shit. Here we go. This is going to be a party. And then... And then it was so much easier. He even trained me how to drive the forklifts, and he trained me. Well, he was my supervisor at the time. But we ended up knowing more about each other. There was this girl named Jen, and she's another Latin girl. And we just started talking a lot about stuff and men and. And she said, well, Maria, what's your sign? I said, I'm an Aries. And then he heard that very loud until he said, and then he says to me, you're an Aries? I said, yes, sir, I am. He goes, no, you're not. When's your birthday? I said, my birthday's March 30th. And he says, no, it ain't. I said, no, you're kidding, right? I was like, all right, now you're going to sit there and tell me when my birthday is, right? He goes, no. I mean, no, because it's weird because my birthday is March 30th. As well, so we share the same birthday. And I said, okay, I got excited about it, and I'm like, so what year? I said, you're still exactly to the T. You are a year older than me, so I could play that card 100 times. Oh, do I play it all the time too? So and then we started talking more and more, and then he was during our dating time, like in the following year or so, he starts expressing, oh, girl, I used to watch you walk away. I used to watch you. I just had to play it cool because, you know, I was your boss, and the boss is not supposed to date the, you know,
yeah,
if you're not in the same team, you can't be dating. So I just played it cool. I said, oh, well, you did. You played it very cool. but, you know, I we used to look at each other like, you know, check each other out. And then when COVID hit, they said if you have any pre-existing conditions, you're welcome to just go home and collect 75% of your pay. I said, that's a perfect opportunity for me to collect money and not have to come in at 3 o'clock in the morning. So, I left him working. He stayed working all the time. And, you know, everything was closed, the bars, everything was closed. So then, but we did text one another saying happy birthday and send each other a drink emoji. And I thought that was fun. And then that was the end of that. And then June comes and they start opening the bars, and you have to limit how many people go in the bar, and you have to limit the chairs. So I was like, well, do you want to go to Union 32? And he said, yeah, sure, why not? And it started on Wednesday. So I met him up on a Wednesday, and he showed up late, as usual. He's a very late person. I was already in 2 drinks, and I was like, oh, I'm going home. I'm just going to wait. Let me just finish this drink. If he's not here, then I'm going to go. But he comes walking in with the red striped pants and a red shirt and his red shoes. He sat down and said, how you doing? And I've never, ever had a date, not the first one, that is, my very first date that, it was not even a date, a get-together. We just got get-together. Mm-hmm. We didn't call it a date at that moment. We just said we're going to go out for drinks as a celebration of our birthdays. Mm-hmm. And the celebration of opening the door, the bars. So we stood there and we closed the place. And we weren't ready to leave one another. So we went to this place called Shooters, which is playing pool. Mm-hmm. And we never really shot pool. We just talked a lot. And it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, I need to get home because I need to go to work in a couple hours. But it was great. It was a pleasure. And then he texted me. He says that he made it home. And I was like, I made it home too, but thank you for a wonderful evening. And he goes, you want to do it again? And I said, absolutely. When? Of course. It was Wednesdays. I was like, so we're having these Wednesday dates. Our dates are only Wednesdays, huh? And then I switched it to a Saturday morning. So we went for a walk. And then we started seeing each other Wednesdays and Thursdays. And then we went to Las Vegas together. That was a bit of a disappointment of a trip, but it understood where I was. I was already in love with him. I was beyond in love with him. But my walls came up, and it's like, because he doesn't feel the same about me. Because he had this thing about his life, and he went through a messy, his first marriage was a messy divorce too. His second fiance was of 9-10 years, was terrible to him. And so he, of course, had his walls up too. So he wanted to get over that, even though he said he was over it over a year ago because of things that happened. I was like, well, I've been over mine for 11 years, so I don't know what to tell you. So we started getting, yeah. So then we ended up having dinner again, and then he talked to me, and I talked to him, and I said, well, if you need a place to stay, my house, you're welcome to live in my house. You can stay in my room. I know how to stay in my own side of the bed. Trust me when I tell you, I know how to sleep on the edge of the bed because I've been doing it for a year already before. When I moved into my house June of 2017. My ex-fiancé lived here until 2018. June 2018, he moved out. But I lived at the end of the edge of my bed or in my closet because I didn't want to be near him. So I had surgery that year, back surgery, because I was in a car accident. And that was the year that I really got to know my ex-fiancé, because he then called me. It was just one night. We were karaoke. We went out karaoke, and I talked to everybody. I'm a very bubbly person. I'm very outgoing. And I just say, congratulations, you did a really good job. And the guy stops and talks to me, and my ex started, that's when his jealousy, and I'm, of course, it was my time to drink and his time to drive because we took turns. And I was like, and then they mentioned his name, and he waved his hand like a child. And I just could sit there, and I just smiled. And I was just like, I'm not going to let myself get mad right now. This ain't happening. No. So I was like, I think it's time to go home. And he says, yeah, okay. And he slams like a child. He walks like a child. And by the time I get to the car, and I'm just smiling my way through him, I'm like, Maria, you're not going to let this man get to you. You're not going to get this to you. Nope, nope, nope. So he goes, how can you do that to me, Maria? How can you do that to me? I'm like, what did I do to you? What did I do? And he proceeded to tell me what I did. Well, all I was doing was talking to another person who happens to be a man. You ignored me. You made me feel little. I said, but you are little. And I gave him my engagement ring. I went inside the car. I gave him my engagement ring and started walking home. And his daughter, I accidentally called his daughter, and she's like, Maria, where are you? Because my dad's here and you're not here. Where are you? And I told her where I was, and I sat and waited for her, and she drove me home. And she apologized on her father's behalf. But then he decided another different night to say, call me a fucking bitch, a fucking controlling bitch, and then a fucking bitch. And he brought out in me what I've never wanted to ever experience again. It was that evil person that everybody becomes. I'm like, after I cooled off and all that, I was downstairs and everything. I was fine. You know, I avoided him at all costs. And then he called me those names, and I said, I can't even mimic it to this day. When he called me those names, it was like a trigger inside me, and I was like, go ahead. Call me that just one more time. And he didn't. He just shook his eyes like, oh, my God, what did I just do? Kind of look, and it's like, just go ahead, do it. Because you see that window? You're going to fly right through it. But he didn't. He's like, I'm sorry. I was like, mm-mm. I'm out. So I went downstairs on the couch, and I ramped it. I kind of like, I myself was like, motherfucker. And I needed to get that anger out. Not at him, because World War III doesn't need to happen. I just needed to express myself and say, this was it. I'm done. And I was done. He finally moved out. I finally owned the house, free and clear, by myself. And he still sends me things like, I love you, Maria. I miss you, Maria. You are my life, Maria. I'm happy for you, Maria. Everything was Maria. But when he would cry at my feet, kneel before me, that freaked me out like there was no tomorrow. When he would literally kneel in front of me and cry, and I can feel his tears on my feet. I'm like, no. And the last time he tried to do that, I said, don't you dare. Don't you dare kneel, because if you kneel, I'm going to kick you. I'm no God. I'm nothing. I'm a person just like you who has feelings, but I don't need you kneeling in front of me crying. This is bullshit. And he didn't. He didn't kneel. And he says that was a sort of respect. I said, bullshit, that ain't no respect. Nuh-uh, that's some crazy crap. And my ex-husband says, damn, you got him like that? I was like, no, I don't got nobody like that. I don't understand that this man kneels before me to cry and tell me how much he loves me. Telling me you love me and crying at the same time. At first I found it sexy, but when it's every single day, that was getting very annoying. That's why, and then when Drew came into the picture, and that's when I said to him, I know how to sleep on my side of the bed, because, yes, I owned this house with Gigi, and but he never he tried to touch me, but he tries to touch me, he knows not to touch me, and I didn't. And we had a king size bed, and I made sure it stood on my side of the bed at all times. So you are welcome to stay with me. And so you get your stuff together. I'm sorry?
Like, you can stay with me, but not with me.
Exactly. And he says, but thank you, but no thank you. I have a friend that's going to lend me his place and for a little while. I said, oh, that's fine. Well, just so you know, you're welcome in my home anytime you want.
One important thing, so we don't get lost on this.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to follow all the details. Now, relating to your book, I want to keep things on a timeline. I know you're excited, and we're discussing this. I do believe I'm enjoying the story, but I think you have a specific list of chapters that go chronologically, right?
Well, that's my theory on them. I started doing this when the one with the teenage girl and the teenagers. I was all over the place. This was started back 10 years ago.
No, what I'm trying to say is it like the process of the entire book? Are all the chapters chronological? By chronological, I mean, are they ordered by time?
Ordered by time?
Like there's a timeline, like, you know, okay, this happened in 2000 and then this happened in 2004.
Oh, the timeline. Okay. So the independence happened now in 2022. This is how I figured independence.
Okay.
My marriage was from, I met my husband from 80. Well, my firstborn child was 85,
mm-hmm.
and then I divorced in 2011. So that's what I was with my husband, which was in a very abusive relationship.
Did you discuss the timeline? I just wanted to confirm that if it's like according to the timeline. Okay. Getting back to the questions. Okay, chapter is titled Growing Up or Children. Walk us through your life as an eldest sibling. How was your relationship with your parents and siblings? Did you have any complexes growing up? How would you describe your childhood?
My childhood was, I'm the oldest of four. My mother was a very sick lady mentally. I was an abused child. I was a child who would be thrown down the stairs, and I have a cousin who was there to get my mother off of me from smacking me after I'd fallen down the stairs. My mother has chased me down the street, has chased my brother. Anything that my siblings did, even though I wasn't home, I would get beaten for it, and then my sibling get beaten. My second sister, she would hide behind me, and I'd get the tip of her belt, her whippings, and her urine, because she always peed herself. So I'd get all of that just as much. My father was an amazing dad. My father was, I swore that my dad stayed with my mother only because of us kids. And I don't know if he was ever willing to live my mom, but I till this day swear that my father stayed with my mother because of us. I was 3 years old, three or four. I was wearing navy tights and my underwear. That's it. It was a hot day. And my mother apparently told me to stop playing ball in the house or stop playing. Because apparently I told her that I remembered this, and she's like, I can't believe you remember. You know, this little bitch remembers this shit happened to her, because I was the last can of tomato sauce that she had. She was making dinner for my daddy when he came home from work. She rubbed my face in this tomato sauce because she was that angry with me. My father comes home from work, and he finds me in the tub, covered up in tomato sauce and my blue tights. And my mom proceeds to tell him why am I like this? And she told him, And I can remember my dad just finished taking my clothes off and giving me a bath and just hold me. He held me pretty tight. And I'm sure he had choice words with my mother. Because later on, nobody gave me the talk of birds and the bees. I was 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a body of a woman. I was 13 years old. And people thought I was 18, 19 years old because of the way I developed. And my neighbor decided to have me his way. He tried to rape me.
Mm-hmm.
And then he told his brother. And then he tried to rape me. But none of them were successful. And I was afraid to tell my mother. My mother, to this day, does not know that those two guys tried to rape me. And my father did not know either.
Why were you afraid to tell?
I was my mother. Oh, my God. If you knew my mother back in the day, let's just say men were afraid of my mother. There was a store, Angel Store, in front of my house, 67 Main Street, which does not exist anymore because it burned down. But I lived at 67 Main Street, and the Angel Store was across the street. They could hear my mother from the third floor coming down the stairs because we had stairs inside the house. And they're like, oh, Lydia's on one. The men would literally go into the store or everybody walked away. Everybody. Everybody's like, yeah, we don't want to deal with this lady today. Uh-uh. So everybody would just walk away and not say a word to her because they knew. The town knew my mother. To this day, my mother is very well known in the town. And I couldn't stand my mother when you go to the store and you buy a card for Mother's Day or you buy flowers and you get that emotion of you looking at these cards and you're reading them and you're like, I don't feel this about my mother. I just don't. I don't have that connection with my mother. My connection, because my mother also, there was this person in our hometown that said, oh, they didn't know who I was. And they thought, like, oh, Margie. I mean, they knew me, but they didn't know that she was my mother. And she goes, oh, hey, is this your mom? I mean, is this your sister? I said, no, that's my mom. I got home. My mom beat the shit out of me because I said she was my mother, not my sister. And till this day, I don't understand why she beat me. Because did she want to feel younger and not feel old? I don't know.
She wanted to feel younger?
I don't know what it was about. The fact that looking at me, it was looking at my mother. But my mother's getting older, so I'm the total younger version of her. So my mother always had a little bit of jealousy with me. As she's getting older, I'm getting a little older, but I'm still much younger. And I'm like, Mom, you gave birth to me, so of course I'm going to be younger, Dumma. And I hated myself. I hated the way I looked. I hated my hair. I hated just everything about me. I hated because I was like, if this what being pretty is, I don't want it. So I was more of a home girl. I never really went out with my girlfriends. I just went to church. And then I was home. Every once in a while, I would go out with my girlfriends, but that was very seldom. Or my dad, I joined the ambulance corps with my father. I was trying to do more things with my dad because my dad and I had an amazing relationship. My father was an amazing man. He was a firefighter. And he was also a volunteer at the ambulance corps in Haverstraw, and he was a very well-loved man, and he worked hard for his family at Lewis Hornick, which he worked till the day he passed away. So he was a very well-respected man. My mother was a feared woman. But when with my father passed away, I became a teenager. I'm 15 years old. I was afraid of guys. But I really liked this one guy, and his name was Efren.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked him, and he liked me. And we fooled around a little bit. And then there was a fire escape at my house that I invited him to come over. And I didn't think he was going to cross the thing. But for me, it was always meant to be. Because at this point in time, this is 1985.
Mm-hmm.
February 11th, 1985. I know for a fact that's the day I conceived my firstborn. And there was 11 people in my house, okay? And this was a Sunday. 11 people were in my house. My mother's at church. And I'm freaking out because this guy, Efren, he comes in, and we were just supposed to chit-chat, and that was the end of that. Okay? And my bathroom door lock, it didn't work. It didn't work. So I put a hamper in front of it, which anyone could open the darn thing and, you know, like see him there. But we ended up in the shower. My father was one of those people that if you're taking too long in the shower, he'd come knocking like, hey, we pay for water. Get out. In Spanish, of course, because you weren't allowed to speak English in my household.
I see.
So my dad, my shower was on for 3 hours. 3 hours. Ethan was in my house for 3 hours, and we did the dirty thing, and that's how I lost my virginity.
I see.
And that's where I got pregnant for the first time, and I knew I was pregnant because I felt different. And I called a friend of mine really right away. I said, Millie, Ethan was here. This happened. She goes, and I said, I feel like this. And she goes, oh, God, no, Margie, you're pregnant. I'm going, I cannot be pregnant. It just doesn't happen that way. Like, Margie, you did it. So, yes, that's how it happens. And
then it dawned upon me.
Needless to know, March 30th came, my birthday. And I did take an EPT before then, and it came out brown. EPT was the thing back in the day. There was no this wording that said pregnant or nothing like that. It was just, if it turned a different color shade of brown, then you knew you were pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept that stick for like ever. And then March 30th comes by, and my dad says, and my auntie, she bought me my 316 dress, and thank God she bought it a little bit big, and we forgot to get it hemmed, you know, to fit me, because then I could barely fit in this gown. Because my belly started popping. And my daddy says to me, Margie, you're getting a little chubby there. And then in my head I'm going, uh-huh. It's going to be gone in 9 months, though. I didn't know how to tell my father that I didn't want my father to be disappointed. And he would have, I was not afraid to tell him. I just, the disappointment that I felt that I knew he would be. I was scared shitless of my mother, though. I even threatened to kill myself when I really didn't say that. I didn't think of it. I just said, just send me to Puerto Rico and I'll be back and whatever. And I said, just send me there and you know, I said, I can get some life and get some cooling. Bullshit. I just wanted to go there and I'd give birth over there so that my mom didn't have to know that I was pregnant at all. But my dad did find out. My aunt said, told her that I was pregnant, and then he said, Margie, what's going on with you? Because I also, my brother always was in my bed, because I had my sister and I shared a bunk bed, and I had the top, and my brother was always on my bed, and I was like, man, why don't we switch rooms? So in order to get through to the bathroom or anywhere, you had to go through my parents' bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently I went to my parents' bedroom one too many times to go use the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know I was pregnant at that moment. You know, I just went to the bathroom a lot because I drank a lot of water. That was my excuse. Daddy, I was drinking a lot of water. But I think he knew better. And then one day he comes home and he goes, Margie, we need to talk. Go upstairs. I went upstairs into his room because I hid, because he had a roof right above his window, and then I could jump to another roof and then go to the other roof and then go down the fire escapes and disappear. That was my thought, because I thought my father was going to kill me or something, even though he never was the one who was the punished person. He never hit me. He never belittled me. But I was afraid because here I am. I'm 15 years old and I'm pregnant. Well, I had turned 16, finally 16, and I'm pregnant. And the one, he's like, Margie, let me tell you something right now. Are you pregnant? And I couldn't look at my father in his eyes. I could not look at him. All I could do was cry. And I said, yes. I shook my head. I was like, yes. And then the next question was, do you know who the father is? I said, I shook my head again and said, yes. And he goes, was it that boy, Ephraim? I said, yes, Daddy, it's Ephraim. And he says, well, this is what's going to happen. You're not going to stop going to school. You're going to have that baby. And I will help you any way that I can. And that's when I looked up and I was like, I'm so sorry. He goes, the reason why I didn't want you with that boy was because he hung out with your cousin. And my cousin is bad news. My cousin's been in jail many times. He's just bad news. So, but he never told me. He never told me. He just said, he just came home one day and said, don't ever want to see that boy here in my house ever again. And I don't ever want to see him with you ever again. Well, you don't tell me. For me, telling me that, I was like, why? I didn't understand. So I just kept seeing him behind his back. And, but then that's when it happened. I got pregnant. I didn't listen, and here is Ephraim in my house. And I got pregnant, and then the whole year went through, and my aunt wanted me to have an abortion, and I told my dad, and my dad said, no, you're not having no abortion. So obviously I didn't. And because I'm 16 years old, but nobody forced me to have one. My son was born November 5th,
mm-hmm.
and his mother, we have friends, and we went to visit this lady, and his mother was there. I was like, oh, Didi, I can't face his mother. I just can't, because she's going to be calling me, because my husband at the time, he goes, that is not my baby. That is somebody else's baby. That's a Dominican baby. I was like, oh, now you're telling me whose baby this is. Okay. All right. Because somebody had told him that was a Dominican baby, that I was pregnant with somebody else's kids. So he didn't take responsibility for that boy.
Mm-hmm.
His mother said, can I see the baby? Can I hold him? And she said, he looks exactly like his daddy. And the same little trim, the bottom of his hair was blonde,
mm-hmm.
and he looked, and that sounds to me like, okay, there's an acknowledgement that this son, I know who my baby daddy is. There was no doubt in my mind who it was. And she said, Margie, can I talk to you personally, you know, privately? I was like, I looked at my aunt, and I was like, oh, my God. She looked at me, and she gave me that look that it's okay. Go, I got the baby. So I go into a private room with her, and I said, you know what? And she said to me, I'm sorry for what my son did. He will live up to his responsibility towards your son. But do you think I can visit your son? He is my grandson. I said, I would never stop you from visiting your own grandchild. I would never do that. And she helped me a lot with him. He got sick. When he got really sick, my mother-in-law was there to go take him in, because I couldn't go into take the x-ray with him.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't go in, but she'd go with him. She spoiled him here and there. And then she says, Margie, Ethan's coming to visit. Can he see the boy? And it's like, sure. He said the baby's not his, though. So my husband shows up one day. My son was filled with strawberry fave, cherries, and because my dad used to drive us to go Lake Welch and then to the farm and pick up some fruit. And on the way home, I say, Daddy, turn around. I just saw Ethan. Turn around. And my dad's like, Mom, Margie, that's impossible. He's in the Army. He's in Alaska. I said, Mom, I know what Ethan looks like. Turn around, please turn around. And my dad turns the car around, and by Lewis Hornets, I did not wait for him to get to the other side. I jumped out of the car, and I waved at him, and I said, hi, how you doing? Like, I had forgotten that he left my ass and said this was not his kid, but we talked on the phone because his mother asked me to talk to him on the phone, so we did. So then he comes to my house, and my father invites him to stay at the house because here I am having his baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy I met, his Robert, he says, you know, Robert Maria, that is the father of your child, and you look like you fell in love with him, so why don't you give him a chance, and we'll see what happens later. And so Robert, we broke it off, and I gave Ethan a chance again. Here I am. I get pregnant again at 17. And my husband says, he was not my husband at this time, though. He was my boyfriend. He says to me, you have to choose. I said, excuse me? What does that mean? You have to choose me or the baby? Well, I chose the baby. And he left me. So I went through the second birth by myself all over again. And, of course, his mother came to my father and pleaded for her son. And she saw my kids. I'd never denied their grandmother. Never. She didn't do nothing to us, so I never denied it. And so it was because of her is the reason that my sons knew their dad. Because of her, I was like, you know what? Fine. I'll let him see the kids. But then he gets arrested because welfare goes after him for money, for putting up with my boys and never paying for child support. Mm-hmm. And so the judge says, do you want a DNA? Do you believe these are your sons? He says, no, I don't need a DNA because I know they are my boys. And I was like, oh, that's a shocker. Okay, so I have no doubt who the father of my kids were. I never knew. I had never doubted. And so... So he says, okay, fine. So we then lived together, tried to get this relationship going. We lived together. We moved in together in 87.
Mm-hmm.
And then here comes my daughter. My husband at the time was an alcoholic and a drug addict. And I used his T-shirt as diapers because I told him the next time we need a diaper and we don't have it, I'm using your T-shirt, your sweatshirt. So that's exactly what I did. I used his sweatshirt, and I remember washing clothes in a bathtub with a board. I used to do that all the time because we never had the money because he was always coked up or drunk. And then here comes my daughter. I told him that I'm pregnant with my daughter. There was a time that my back hit the window. Thank God in upstate New York, the windows were double pane. And my back hit the window. And I even have a picture with my hand being in a wristband because it was, it bent in the fight. And I was pregnant. There was another time with my daughter. I was pregnant with her. And he's choking the living daylight out of me because he's drunk like a skunk. And I didn't give him the car keys so he can go out and get more drinks. I was like, Ethan, you have too much to drink. Why don't I go to the store for you? Give me the fucking keys. And I wouldn't. So he choked. He was choking me. And again, I am pregnant, and he's choking me. His brother-in-law comes down and takes him off of me. And I'm left with this around my neck, and I couldn't sleep because I was afraid that he was going to attack me again while I was sleeping, and I slept with my boys to make sure that my boys were okay. So from the very first time he slapped my face because I wouldn't shut up, he said I made him. He apologized like crazy, but I made him do it because I wouldn't shut up or I did not respond or it was just nothing. So from the very first time he slapped me to the time he threw me practically out the window, after the time he choked me while I was pregnant. I was not allowed to look outside the car. If I looked up at the car next door to me, he would be like, "What the fuck are you looking at? You know, you like that fucking guy?" And I was like, I was very afraid for a very long time. I was afraid to leave. I was afraid to do something different. I remember having, I was like, you know what, I'm leaving. I'm going to my mom's because I need to have the boys being watched while I give birth to this baby. And so I'm here, 9 months pregnant. My water break can break at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Fuck you, then go." So I did. I took a Greyhound bus and to Nanuet Mall, and then from Nanuet Mall, I had to take another bus, and it was bus to bus. And needless to say, I'm here walking around with two boys, two very young boys, a suitcase, two suitcases, and I'm very, very pregnant, and my water can break at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally make it to my grandfather's house because I couldn't make it to my mom's house. I was just too tired and too much pain. So I made it to my grandfather's house, and my grandfather put me in the car the next morning and took me to my mom's house. And my sisters and my brother, they helped watch my son because at this point my father passed away that same year. So in 1988, my daughter... that's when my father passed away in 88, January of 88. My sister-in-law, she was pregnant with her first child. So she gives birth in July. The very next day, her mother passes away. So that, you know, my husband's mother passes away. And then my daughter is born in September. So we had two deaths and two births that same year with opposite sex. So that was an interesting year. And then in 89, I got stupid, and I married the father of my children. And on our wedding day, he says, "Hey, I'll be back." I'm like, "What do you mean you'll be back?" "Oh, I'm going with Cisco to wherever the hell he was going." I was like, "You do realize this is our wedding day. We're married. This next should be a honeymoon, don't you think?" And he got a little bit tissy and got mad, and I was like, okay. So he stayed with me, but it wasn't a fun stay with me. And then we went home, changed clothes. We went to a local bar, and it was interesting because he paid more attention to the people there than to the wife, the person who just became his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then he saw that I was irritated, and then he started paying attention to me. And then we got to our honeymoon in Pennsylvania. It was torture. We were more mad at each other than we were of anything. If anything, we were just more, we were not open. We were just mad at each other. And he was belittling me, and he was just yelling at me and cursing at me, and I was just a very quiet type, didn't talk back because I didn't dare. I didn't dare to talk back. And then we went back home, picked up the kids, and back to Albany. And that's when a lot of more hitting happened. Arguments, and that's when I stood up and said, one day I decided to say, "Forget this." I said to him, "Let me tell you something. I know you're bigger. I know you're stronger. But you better knock me out and make sure I don't remember your name, so I'm not coming after you. Now, two, just kill me." I was shaking like a leaf as I'm saying these things, but I didn't let him see that I was afraid. I had to, like, become something or someone different for me to just go ahead and say these things. So he backed off, and the hitting stopped a little bit. And I ended up putting a restraining order on him in 2009. And then, that's a lie. I didn't put the, yes, I did. I started with the restraining order, but then we changed our minds. I call that the honeymoon phase, where there's like, when they hit you, and there was a time that, in Coco, we went out drinking. We went out, it was a Christmas party for my job that I was working at. And it was great. It was going great. And this club has two doors to go into the restroom. You can go through when you first come in, or you can go while you're inside the club. There's a door there, too. So it's two doors. So my husband at the time, I told him, you know, he should know that I have something for bathrooms when I've been drinking too much. I just drink, and I go into the bathroom and take a nap until I sober up a little bit, and maybe an hour or whatever. So he knew that about me. But at this specific day, I wanted a cigarette to sober up a little bit. So apparently I dropped the cigarette. But according to what he had said, because I was in the bathroom for too long, he said that when somebody opened the door from the outside, he said that I dropped. I fell down like I was trying to hide from him. Hell, I didn't even see him. I was just thinking I dropped the fucking cigarette before I lit it up. And that's when you can smoke inside the bars. I just lit it up, and I took the two puffs so I can sober up. So I see him waiting for me, and I was like, hey, honey, how? And he grabbed me by the hair, by my arm first, and he threw me outside, and he goes, what the fuck you think I am? Am I a fucking stupid? Am I a fucking idiot? And, oh, he cursed me out like there was no tomorrow. And what made it so much worse is that no one lifted a finger to help me. No one. This man threw me against the wall, and he told me to stand right fucking there until he got the car, which was not far at all. And I'm still trying to comprehend what's happening. What's happening right now? What's going on? What did I do? What did I say? What? I was so confused. Besides, there was alcohol in the play, because I had the alcohol, and we were drinking. And I don't understand, what did I do wrong? I don't understand. So, and then he gets in the car, and I'm trying to open the window. He grasps the back of my hair so hard that I just, to this day, I suffer from migraines. And I told him, I need you to pull over because I'm going to throw up. And he's like, no, you're going to fucking wait until you get home. I was like, and then he's mumbling about, I'm going to go to fucking jail tonight, and it's all going to be your fault. I was like, you're not going to go to jail. You're not going to go to jail. I just need you to pull over. Please pull over. And I swear, I won't say anything. I just need you to pull over, please. So he finally pulls over into a spot in Coco that nobody is parked at. It's by the beach. It had these big tunnels. And my thing, I was running away from him. And I was like, you motherfucker, look, I can save my own blood. Are you happy about that? And I wanted to commit suicide. Right then and there, I wanted suicide. So I tried to get into the water, into the ocean. But the ocean was so godforsaken cold. And then he pulls me out of the water. And I'm just crying. I'm just beyond crying. And he says, let's just go home, in a very calm voice. He says, let's go home. So I said, okay. So I lost my blouse to the dress. I'm covered in sand. I'm covered in dirt. So I get home and I look at my face, and I'm just like in awe about my face. My face was disfigured. It was black and blue, and everything else. And so, are you going to let him run? Okay, just make sure you watch out for him. So then, yeah, I'm here. I just had my grandkids walked outside.
No, I do understand. I do understand that. I'm saying.
So I just, with all that, me getting beaten up and me Nobody. And I had to tell my boys. It's like, I had a lie. And I said, my excuse was, like my son, Ephraim Jr., he says, Mom, what happened? Oh, you know how Mom and Dad like to play fight all the time and wrestle. Well, Mom got a little bit carried away, and I banged into his knee. I banged myself into his knee. And they bought it because they were young. They didn't know any better. But I kind of slipped one day, and I was like, I'm not having your dad hit me again. And I slipped right then and there, and I was like, no, I mean, not that day. But then I told my friend, my boss, Landy, I went to work, and I put glasses on, and she says, Maria, I need you to look at me. I need you to take those glasses off, and I need you to look at me. I said, yes, Landy, I'm working, though. And I looked at her, and she finally said, the glasses are off. And she looked at me, and she started, can you come to my office now? I said, yeah, of course. I'll go to your office. So she goes, have you seen the doctor yet? I said, no, I have not. She says, why not? I haven't had a moment. It's Monday, and I'm here. She goes, well, call your doctor right now and see if you can get into an appointment right now. I said, okay. And then she hired somebody to come talk to me about, you know, because she had seen me the night before being fine. You know, we were having a good time because it was a Christmas party with her business. And she gave me the time off from work to not have, because my eye was where there's white. There was no white. There was nothing but red, bloodshot red. Red and brown. The color of my eye and red all over. And I went to see the doctor, and they gave me an emergency because I couldn't, my eye, I guess, you know, that test that they give you, that you look at their finger and you move your eyes when they say. Mm-hmm. So that my eyes didn't pass that test. So they gave me another doctor, Dr. Ho. And I went directly to him, and he looks behind the eye. He says, okay, the retina, everything back there is looking good. But you need to have your eye patch on for at least 2 weeks and then come back. So I had an eye patch for 2 weeks, and then he dilated my eyes. And I called my husband, and I said, I'm going to need a ride home because my eyes are being dilated, and I need to go see the eye doctor. I mean, the eye doctor is going to have to take care of me. So I can see how scared he is at this point. He's scared that I'm going to tell somebody that how this happened. But I never did. I never knew. But my friend Jane, she knew, because I didn't know that I did it, actually. You know, I never knew I actually pulled that stunt of wearing sunglasses inside the house. And you can see the marks on my face. So I tried to hide it very well. I failed miserably, but my mom to this day doesn't know that I was beaten by my husband. To this day, they don't know that he, because he was a loving, kind person in front of people. But there were words like, Maria, how can he be like this to your kids? How can he be this way to you? And as time went on, we used to hang out at this place. I don't know how to say it in English, but it was like a storage room. But they used to run a mechanic used to run it with, you know, he rented a double wide, and then he would just do mechanical work there. So we go, so every time he and I would go to dinner, he would be like, let's stop over by this guy. So I was like, okay, we're going out to dinner, and he, just for a minute. Well, we never made it to dinner, and he would get mad at me because I wouldn't drink a beer. And then I'm getting so tired of him yelling at me because I'm not drinking a beer. I finally drink the beer, and then he gives me another one, and then he gives me another one, and then I start saying, okay, I'll have another one. And then he gets mad at me because I'm drinking too much. And then I did not know that this was noticeable. So one day we went back to the place, and my husband was talking to I don't know who, and the guys are like, Maria, can you sit down over here? We want to talk to you for a minute. He's like, yeah, sure, what's up, guys? Like, what the fuck is wrong with your husband? I'm like, excuse me? He gets mad if you don't drink. He gets mad if you drink. What the fuck is wrong with him? We don't like this attitude with him. I said, well, why are you telling me that? Not tell him. I'm sorry. Did he offend you? Or, you know, I'm here trying to think of excuses again. Here I am again, excuse after excuse. And like I said, before that, well, the honeymoon phase, like I said, when he hit me, he figured out when he saw my face being the way I forgot to say that. When he saw my face the way it was, like, my face was so swollen. It was like, I cried. He even helped me take a shower because I was just in so surreal that I'm going through this, that I've been hit to the point that I'm getting my eye. You can't see my eye. It's all this colors that are happening to my face. And then he couldn't sleep that night because he was just busy making sure that he put an ice bag on my face. Because, like I said, my face was so swollen. And he didn't sleep because oh, baby, I'm so sorry. Baby, I know it hurts. I know it hurts, but you're going to have to put the ice on. I'm like, but I don't want the ice. Just put the ice on. It's okay. So I laid the ice while he's doing it, and then I take a little nap because it gives me the Tylenol and ices me and babies me for about a month until he gets mad again about something. And there goes the honeymoon phase out the window with cursing at me in front of people. There was my friend George. His wife Donna, they know me all too well. And they're like, George finally met my husband for the first time. And apparently, George, I finally go to Carmen's house again, and he says, Maria, how do you do it? And I'm going, excuse me? How do I do what? You're always with a smile on your face. I've heard stories from Don. I've heard stories from Carmen of what Efren's done to you, your husband, and how evil he can be. And I couldn't believe anything about it. Not a word. I mean, I just thought they were exaggerating the truth. I said, I'm sorry. What am I missing here? And he goes, let me tell you something. I met your husband for the first time. Isn't that the time that I met him for the first time? I said, yes. And he says to me, it takes a lot to intimidate me. It takes a lot to discover me. But your husband, and those 2 hours that you were here with him, I was intimidated by him. I was afraid for you. I told Donna, we need to get you away from him. His wife, Donna, is the one who gave me the money to divorce my husband. Because then Tom saw, because I also rolled out of a moving vehicle, blacktop hurts like a mother. So I was covered in bruises as well, again.
Maria?
And that's when I finally divorced my husband.
I see. Maria, we're going to have to continue this on a second session because I have a meeting lined up, which is coming in 10 minutes.
Oh, okay. No problem, because I have to shower and go to work.
Okay, perfect. By the way, you are in which time zone?
Central.
You're in Central. Okay, perfect.
What time zone are you in?
We're in Eastern.
Oh, don't worry. I'll be Eastern next year. I got to go back.
Hi. Ah, that's cool.
Yes, I remember you.
Yeah.
That's cool. And we'll be keeping in touch through Lisa. I'll try to see if we can arrange another one by tomorrow. If not, then we'll do it the day after. And I'll continue to ask you the questions and extract the information, okay? We'll use these recordings that are being done right now in order to complete the book, okay?
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for calling.
No problem. It's been an interesting call, and I give my own insight, but it's just a lot.
No, I know. There was a lot, because this is why everybody's told me to write a book. And I, as you can see, I started and I tried and I started Googling things, and that's the route to that. I have journals after journal.
We'll help you out. And do you have like a written journal, or is it like a typed out one?
No, it's not typed. It's handwritten.
Okay.
Then you can proceed with it.
Oh, we'll see if we can find somebody to use that, and then we'll talk on, okay?
Okay.
Let's leave this for another time. It's been a pleasure talking to Maria. I find interest in this story, and I'll give you something good once we start borrowing our drafts, okay?
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
Maria, welcome. Okay. Have a good day, and take care of yourself. I'll talk
you too.
Later.
Bye.